Cozy traditions feel good, especially this time of year. And that includes changing up your makeup look for fall. From lashes for days with the viral Liquid Lash Extension Mascara to enhancing a smoky eye with your favorite shade of Brilliant Eye Brightener, Thrive Cosmetics is your go-to for completing every fall look. Whether you want a simple, just gotta get out the door routine or fall glam that wows from the office to all your favorite fall festivities, you'll always look and feel radiant with Thrive Cosmetics. Plus, every product is 100% vegan, cruelty-free, and made with clean, skin-loving ingredients. And for every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates to help communities thrive. So every time you use your favorite Thrive Cosmetics product, you're helping communities you care about, too. Complete your fall look. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/cozy for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/cozy.
Everyone, I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And you're listening to Key to the Case. Welcome back. We are so happy to have each and every one of you here. We want to start out like we typically like to start out by thanking everyone who has listened to the podcast so far. Your support means a lot. And we also want to thank those of you who have left us a 5-star review or rating. That helps us a lot as well. So thank you all very much. As always, you can find us on Instagram at Key to the Case Podcast. And if you want, you can reach out to us at our email. That's keytothecase@gmail.com. I'm eager to get into today's case because I would say it's probably the most bizarre case we've covered. And when we first started this podcast, I knew it. I wanted it to be one of the first cases we covered because it's one of those cases that just sticks with you. And I guarantee many of you, if you haven't heard this case already, will be thinking about this in the days, weeks, maybe even months to come. So Sean, are you ready to get into it?
I am. And based on what you just said, I'm pretty excited for this one.
Judy Smith, born Judith Eldridge, was born on December 15th, 1946 on Cape Cod in Massachusetts. Her parents were two hardworking people who owned a diner in town. Judy had a twin brother and a younger brother, both of whom she was estranged from at the time of her disappearance. Judy got married at a young age, right after high school, but this marriage was fleeting because her husband fled the country and ended up in Sweden, all in an attempt to avoid the draft for the Vietnam War. Judy was able to hunt him down in Europe, but she ultimately left Europe alone, and that marriage came to an end. It wasn't too long before Judy met her second husband, Charles, and the couple had two children, Amy and Craig. Sadly, this marriage didn't work out either, and Judy was left to raise her two young children on her own, having to utilize government assistance to get by. But Judy was determined to make a better life for herself and her kids, and she put herself through nursing school. Judy's kids recalled times when they were young where she would take them to the movies, and she'd be out in the car studying for nursing exams. Those who knew Judy described her as capable, resourceful, strong-willed, and blunt. And when you read about Judy, those personality traits really shine through. Despite being characterized as a tough woman, she was also caring, and one of Judy's friends told Unsolved Mysteries that she just had a way of coming into your life and making it better. Judy met the man who would become her third husband, Jeff, while working as a home care nurse in the Boston area. She happened to be treating his father. Jeff was a Harvard-educated attorney who came from a pretty different background compared to Judy. His father was a well-known criminal defense attorney in New England, and the Philadelphia Inquirer described him as a product of money and private schools. Jeff went through a divorce in the past as well, and he had primary custody of his daughter, so that was a common thread for both of them. Judy and Jeff dated for about 7 years before moving in together and waited 3 years before they tied the knot in November 1996. There are various accounts of Judy and Jeff's relationship. a friend of Judy's told Unsolved Mysteries that their marriage was, quote, tenuous at the time of Judy's disappearance. But Jeff explained that he believed they were in a happy relationship. He said he wouldn't pretend that they'd never gotten into an argument, but he truly believed that Judy was happy with their relationship and he hadn't seen a sign or any indication to the contrary. So I found it interesting to learn about these dueling perspectives. And I think both can be true. It seems possible that Jeff thought everything was okay because Judy didn't share her feelings with him. But maybe she expressed those feelings to her friends. Regardless of what was going on, it was evident to me through Jeff's interviews that he loved and adored Judy. Jeff, as I mentioned, was a lawyer. He worked in healthcare and pharmaceutical law, which oddly enough is really the root to this entire story. Jeff's work brought him and Judy to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania on April 9th, 1997. This was just 5 months after they got married. Jeff was scheduled to attend the annual Northeast Pharmaceutical Conference to moderate a panel, and Judy joined him, which she had done several times in the past for this specific conference. When Judy and Jeff arrived at Boston Logan International Airport to catch their 3:30 p.m. flight, Judy realized that she neglected to bring her driver's license, therefore she could not board the plane. This made me think of this time when I was a kid and my mom forgot her driver's license at the airport. We were traveling for a family vacation. Thankfully, she had an old driver's license in her purse and they let her on the flight with that, which I feel like wouldn't fly today, but I believe my mom switched purses the night before and forgot to bring her wallet with her current ID, which kind of made me wonder if this were the case with Judy. It's possible she was someone who switched purses often, and at that rate, it's not hard to imagine how she could have forgotten it. However, some have theorized that she intentionally left her ID at home, but that theory will make more sense as we continue on with this story.
Yeah, it seems odd to me that she would forget one of the two most important items when traveling. One, your wallet, which would most of the times have your ID in it, and two would be your suitcase, which I'm sure she didn't forget. But it just seems odd to me that you would forget probably the most important item when traveling.
Yeah, I thought it was odd too. I know it was kind of a new requirement, the whole requiring the ID at this time. But still, Judy wasn't described as an unorganized person by any means. So I found it interesting that she would forget something like this.
Yeah, but even then, if it was the new requirement to have your ID when you were traveling, you're traveling to a new city. So I would hope you'd remember to bring your ID for, I don't know, renting a car or
anything.
Really, literally anything. Yeah.
Right. Seems like something you should just always have on you.
Yeah. And I would assume like 99% of people carry their ID in their wallet. And if she forgot her ID, then most likely she forgot her entire wallet. And I mean, that would mean she'd forgot all of her credit cards. She forgot cash, you know, all of it. So,
right. Right. So Jeff went ahead and boarded the flight to Philadelphia and Judy went back home via public transit to retrieve her driver's license. Judy made it back to the airport and she caught a flight that departed Boston at 7:30 p.m. and landed in Philadelphia at 9 p.m. Once Judy landed, she made her way to the DoubleTree Hotel where the conference was held. When she arrived at the hotel at around 10 p.m., she ran into Jeff in the lobby and she greeted him with flowers in an effort to make up for forgetting her ID and arriving late. According to Jeff, Judy was embarrassed about the whole situation, but it didn't sound like Jeff was that upset with Judy about what had happened. Judy picked up a key from the front desk and they went on their way. The following morning, April 10th, 1997, Jeff took off for breakfast while Judy showered. It's presumed that she left that morning to go sightseeing around Philadelphia. She told Jeff she intended to visit Independence Hall and see the Liberty Bell. Judy and Jeff had dinner plans that evening, so when Judy hadn't shown up that evening and she wasn't in the hotel room, Jeff grew concerned. He wasn't immediately alarmed, but after searching for her to no avail, he grew concerned enough to call the police and to check local hospitals to see if Judy was admitted anywhere, but she wasn't. The police told him it was too early to file a missing person report or to conduct a search for Judy. Jeff was dissatisfied with this response, as many people would be, and he wasn't going to sit and wait. So he took matters into his own hands by reaching out to the media and prominent government figures, some of who were at the conference. Deputy Police Commissioner Robert Zappel got involved and he got in touch with Central Detectives, at which point a decision was made to look into this case seriously. There was an emphasis on the fact that Judy was a tourist who went missing, not someone who already lived in the city. The next day, on April 11th, a number of seasoned detectives began searching for Judy. The Philadelphia Inquirer reported that starting the day after Judy disappeared and for the week following, police searched for Judy at homeless shelters, churches, the Broad Street subway, train stations, bus stations, morgues, psychiatric institutions, and other parts of the city. With each stop they made, they handed out missing person flyers with Judy's information. One particular area of interest was Chinatown because those closest to Judy felt like that would be somewhere she'd want to explore. Detectives didn't find Judy during the searches, but they did encounter witnesses who, after reviewing the missing person flyer with Judy's picture, believed they saw someone who looked like Judy on the day she disappeared. According to the Philadelphia Inquirer, there was one witness who recalled a woman who looked like Judy chasing a piece of paper on the ground that was flying away from her, and she was smiling and laughing slightly to herself while chasing this piece of paper.
Don't people do that all the time, though? They see like a wanted person or a missing person's flyer, and they want to get involved, and they say, "Oh, I recognize them. They were blah 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 at this location."
Yeah, I definitely think we have to take witness sightings with a grain of salt. I don't know if it's necessarily people wanting to get involved, but I think memories are tricky, and if someone has somewhat of a generic appearance, it can be easy to think, "Oh, I saw that person here or there."
Yeah, but you should be absolutely sure that the person that you saw is the same person in this photo, because then you could be leading the police in the wrong place.
But maybe these people thought they were sure, or thought, "Well, I'm not 100% sure, but maybe they could talk to more people in that specific area and see if they saw someone similar." A tourist bus driver reported that he dropped someone off who looked like Judy at 3 p.m. the day she disappeared in front of the DoubleTree Hotel where she was staying. There was another witness who claimed to have seen Judy at a mall located about 20 minutes away from the DoubleTree Hotel. This witness was in the dress department, and she stated that the woman who looked like Judy tried to start a conversation with her about various inappropriate topics, one being menopause. This mall was in a suburb, so investigators thought it would be strange for Judy to take a bus to visit a suburban area rather than stay in the city to explore. There were various other sightings, but police uncovered that there just so happened to be a woman who looked extremely similar to Judy, who was known as a wanderer in the city and often spent her days wandering around the streets of Philadelphia. So it's quite possible that a good number of these alleged sightings of Judy were actually sightings of this other woman. I think in general, witness sightings are helpful, but it's hard to rely upon them, especially when the people who claim to have seen the person in question did not personally know them. Witness sightings feel much more reliable to me when it comes from someone who actually knows the person. A front desk hotel employee thought she remembered seeing a woman who looked like Judy the night she would have arrived, and she definitely remembered seeing Jeff. Jeff was a large man, so she said it was easier to remember him. She also thought she recalled seeing Judy the following morning, but when she looked back at her work schedule, she realized she hadn't worked that morning. I think this goes to your point and kind of what we've been talking about, how people's memories aren't perfect, and you may think you see someone when you actually didn't, especially when someone's asking if you saw someone during a specific period. It's almost like your brain wants that person to be in your memory, even if they're not. Police began to question if Judy actually made it to Philadelphia, because the only person known to Judy who said she was there was Jeff. Massachusetts State Police confirmed that Judy's airline ticket for the 7:30 p.m. flight she booked was used. The flight attendants aboard that flight were questioned to determine if they recalled seeing Judy, and they did not, but it's not shocking considering the number of people they encounter on any given day. Other passengers on the flight didn't recall seeing her, and the seat next to Judy was vacant, which is unfortunate because I think if anyone were to remember Judy, you'd think it would be the person sitting beside her. But even if that were the case, when I'm on a flight, I'm not typically getting that good of a look at the people next to me unless we have a conversation. It would be weird to be sneaking peeks at the people next to me. Despite not being able to track down witnesses who recalled seeing Judy on the flight, as standard practice, the flight attendants took a head count to ensure the number of people on the plane matched the number of tickets purchased for the flight, and those numbers matched. To me, it seems likely that Judy was on the flight and people just didn't remember. Detectives seemed to still really consider the possibility that Judy never made it to Philadelphia.
Did they question the housekeepers at all to see if they could tell if two people were sleeping in the bed rather than one?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the housekeepers. That's a good question. But the detectives made some observations about the hotel room. One observation they made was that there wasn't a lot of female stuff in the hotel room. One of the detectives who looked through the room noted that there was a bag of curlers on the bathroom sink, but no makeup, hairbrushes, or other items you might expect a woman to have in her hotel room, although there were some articles of women's clothing in the dresser drawers, as well as a couple of dresses hanging up. Additionally, they found the bouquet of flowers in the room, which aligned with what Jeff told investigators about how Judy brought him flowers to apologize for forgetting her ID. They couldn't find the clothes Judy wore the day she arrived in Philadelphia, which struck investigators as odd.
Yeah, I was just thinking, if Jeff wanted to make it look like Judy was there, did he just go to like the CVS down the street and then he walks in and he's like, well, what do women have? And he just grabs the curlers and leaves and places them in the bathroom. And he's like, oh, that'll do.
Yeah, I know. I had the same exact thought about the curlers. I thought it seemed like if Jeff were attempting to make it look like she were there, curlers seemed so random and to be the only thing outside of the clothes, meaning no really toiletries or makeup or jewelry or anything. The one thing he can think of is curlers. That didn't make sense to me either. But all of the information I'm sharing that could be perceived as strange or suspicious didn't seem unusual to Judy's kids. Her kids explained that Judy didn't wear a lot of makeup or jewelry, and she always carried this little red backpack with her that would have carried any of those items, and that backpack wasn't in the hotel room. They also said it would not be out of the ordinary for Judy to wear the same clothes she wore the day prior, the next day. Her son said they were all that way in her family. So while I think this notion that Judy may have never made it to Philadelphia is one that police thoroughly investigated and considered, most of what made them question this can be explained. And Judy's kids were frustrated with the belief by the police that Jeff could be lying. According to the Philadelphia Inquirer, Judy's son said about the matter, quote, I want the police to ask questions, any questions they can think of. That means they're still investigating and I don't want them to stop. But they're wrong if they think Jeff did anything to my mother. He wouldn't in a million years, unquote. Judy's daughter echoed this sentiment and said, quote, Jeff is a completely honest person. He's a gentle person. If he says she was in Philadelphia, she was there. It makes me mad that there's any doubt at all about that, unquote. And I think these statements are meaningful. We have to keep in mind, Jeff is not their father. He's been in their life for a while, that's for sure. He's their stepfather, and it seems like they have a good relationship, but I don't necessarily see them having the same allegiance to Jeff as someone might have with their own dad if they have a good relationship with them. So if Judy made it to Philadelphia, then the question was, where is she? Various theories started to crop up. Did someone abduct Judy? Those closest to her describe Judy as an unlikely victim. They believe she would scream and fight if someone attempted to abduct her, and she was street smart as well. We also have to remember that she would have been out in a busy city with a large number of potential witnesses if someone were to abduct her. Of course, it's still possible, but it makes it less likely.
Yeah, and if Jeff's story is correct, she is wanting to hit the more touristy places, which would be a lot more densely populated.
Right. Another possibility is that she suffered the effects of some sort of neurological event or amnesia and wandered off. Jeff consulted with 3 different neurologists about this possibility, and while they acknowledged that it was possible, it was highly improbable. Judy had also recently had a physical leading up to her disappearance where everything checked out. There were no health concerns at that point. Some people wondered if Judy died by suicide, but her loved ones were adamant that Judy wouldn't do that, and there were no indications that she was suicidal, nor did investigators find Judy's body to support this theory. The last possibility was that Judy up and left her life, whether she intended to leave temporarily or permanently. It's possible, although her family thought of this as unlikely, that Judy wanted to escape for a variety of reasons. Maybe the reason Judy couldn't be found was because she didn't want to be found. Regardless of what happened, Judy's family was determined to get her back. When Jeff returned home to Boston, he faxed and mailed out approximately 9,000 missing person flyers all the way from Maine to Florida, so the entire East Coast. And he hired 3 private investigators, but all of this came up short. Now, if you didn't read the episode description, or if you're Sean, you might be thinking this is a story of a disappearance. And this is kind of where that story would end. But in a bizarre turn of events, on September 7th, 1997, 5 months after Judy disappeared, 2 deer hunters stumbled upon a partially buried skeleton that was strewn across a distance of 100 yards in the Pisgah National Forest.
What?
Yeah. The Pisgah National Forest is located in western North Carolina, over 600 miles or over 900 kilometers away from Philadelphia. This forest offers some of the best hiking trails in the region, as well as biking paths, picnic areas, and much more. The forest is to the north and south of Asheville, North Carolina, and Asheville had a population of about 66,000 at that time. The people who found the remains immediately contacted law enforcement, and the Buncombe County Sheriff's Office arrived at the scene. The woman whose remains were found was wearing jeans, thermal underwear, hiking boots, and she had a wedding ring on. Near the body, a blue backpack with about $80 in it and some winter-style clothing was discovered. A shirt was nearby as well, with an additional $80 or so in it, and a pair of sunglasses. There was no additional jewelry with the remains or personal identification, so when the body was found, it was unknown who it was. There were cutting marks on the ribs and puncture marks on the victim's bra, leading to the conclusion that the victim was likely stabbed to death. Despite the stabbing marks, the cause of death couldn't be positively determined. There were 2 unique characteristics about the remains. It was clear the victim had expensive and extensive dental work, and it was also clear that she suffered from severe arthritis in the left knee. Because Jeff distributed so many flyers of Judy, some of those flyers made it to this area, so a request for Judy's dental records was made by authorities. Once a comparison of the victim and Judy's dental records was completed, the remains were determined to be Judy Smith, at which point her manner of death was categorized as homicide. Everyone was puzzled to learn that Judy was found in North Carolina. Reportedly, Judy had been to North Carolina twice before her disappearance, but not this particular part of the state in which she was found. Jeff Smith speculated that something happened to Judy in Philadelphia and she, quote, wasn't in full possession of her faculties, unquote. But the bottom line here is that no one even had North Carolina on their radar as a potential location where Judy could be. So it was a complete surprise.
Based on what she was wearing, it sounded like she was dressed for exactly what she was doing. I don't think anyone who would have killed her would have stripped her in whatever she was wearing and put those clothes on. I think she was dressed for hiking intentionally.
Exactly. Yes. Those clothes did not align with what she was last seen wearing. So it's pretty apparent that Judy got these clothes somewhere along the way. And I agree. I don't think someone who wants to harm her is going to change her clothes, put her in hiking boots and go hiking with her and then hurt her.
My instant thought is she wanted to leave her life. She's been to North Carolina twice before, is what you said. Maybe she loved it, even though she hadn't been in this part of North Carolina, but she maybe heard that, you know, it's great hiking country. So she left her life, went to North Carolina and had an unfortunate incident on the hiking trail. That's where my mind leads. But I'm sure there's going to be more facts presented along the way and I might change my mind.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, I'm kind of on the same page, but we'll get into all the theories. Don't you also think it's unusual that she would want to hike though with the severe arthritis in her knee?
Yeah, but maybe she had medication specifically for arthritis or some sort of painkiller or maybe even just ibuprofen that helped with pain with arthritis. So if it wasn't a hard hiking trail, if it was a pretty moderate or easy hiking trail, I don't have arthritis, so I don't know the severity of the pain, but maybe if she had some sort of medication, like I said, then that wouldn't really deter her from hiking, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Something to ease the pain just enough to where it's comfortable to do the hike in the first place, or to ease the pain for the duration of the hike. That makes sense. Several witnesses came forward to say they recalled seeing a person who they believe was Judy in the days following her disappearance. One clerk in Asheville was interviewed for Unsolved Mysteries, and she stated that Judy came into her shop and she seemed totally normal and alert. There was nothing to indicate that anything was wrong with her. Judy spoke with this clerk a bit and mentioned that she was from Boston and she had been in Philadelphia with her attorney husband for a convention he was attending. She said that she decided to come down to Asheville as if it were her own decision. This is a really solid witness account because the clerk was able to share all these corroborating details that Judy relayed that helped confirm that it was actually Judy. This wasn't just a woman who came forward to say she saw someone who looked like Judy. There was also a hotel employee who believed Judy stayed at the hotel from April 10th to April 12th. April 10th was the day Judy vanished from Philadelphia. There were a couple of other sightings from people who thought they saw Judy driving a gray sedan full of boxes and bags. One of these sightings was by a deli owner who said, "This woman purchased $30 worth of sandwiches in a toy truck." I think out of all of these sightings, the one I put the most weight in is the woman who actually spoke to Judy, got personal details from her. The other sightings could have been Judy as well, but it's hard to say without anyone having spoken to her or gotten her name or anything like that.
Yeah, that woman got her background pretty much spot on.
Exactly. So,
unless it was a massive coincidence that someone with the same exact background as Judy was there too, I think it was Judy.
Right. So it appears Judy likely went to Asheville of her own accord. But why? And what happened to her? It kind of goes back to the theories we talked about already, but now with a different lens since we know the outcome. Jeff thought it seemed like quite a distance for someone to be able to forcefully take Judy. I agree. It doesn't seem likely that someone could have had the power to transport Judy that distance, but then let her go about Asheville freely if the witness sightings of her are correct. And I do put stock in the clerk. But also, why would this person take her this distance just to end up killing her out in public? Sure, it was probably fairly secluded, but definitely not a private area. I know there are people who believe Judy was taken and then murdered in Asheville by the person who took her, but I see this as one of the least likely options.
You could stop 100 miles away from Philly. You don't have to go 600 miles down to Asheville. Yeah, that doesn't seem very plausible to me that they would go that, or unless they knew that she did like North Carolina like I was saying before, maybe she loved it. Maybe that person knew that she loved it so much, and they took those facts, brought her down to North Carolina, because that's where my mind went immediately, was that she wanted to leave her life and go to North Carolina because she loved it so much. So I don't know, maybe someone had those same thoughts and they could kind of create this story that she wanted to leave her life, and you know, they got her secluded and murdered her.
Whoa. I hadn't even thought about that. Like, someone who knew Judy, or at least knew enough about her to know that she'd been to North Carolina a couple of times, it might be somewhere that she would want to escape, go hiking. Although her family was surprised that she was there. It's not like she'd been to this part of North Carolina before, but I see what you're saying. I think that's possible. It just seems really involved, you know, to drive someone this far just to ultimately kill them.
Well, it is a very serious crime. So maybe someone went through a lot of hurdles and went to the, you know, the lengths to do this type of thing, because it is a very serious thing to do.
Yeah.
You don't, maybe this person's very calculated. Maybe they made a plan. If she did, in fact, get murdered, then yeah, they would have to have kind of this somewhat of a master plan to do this.
Some pretty extreme measures, I would say.
Yeah.
There was also the possibility that Judy suffered a random neurological event, such as amnesia, or she suffered a head injury that altered her mental state. But we have to keep in mind that the neurologist Jeff consulted with found this to be improbable, although possible. And the witnesses in Asheville recalled Judy being coherent, not disoriented.
Didn't she have stab wounds consistent with a knife?
Yes, but I think this would be to explain how she got to North Carolina in the first place. If she were disoriented or confused, okay. Right? She could have.
I thought you meant she had some sort of stroke or something and fell and killed her. You know, and died that way. That's where I thought you were going with that. Not that she just kind of had an episode and ended up in North Carolina. Okay, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think if this were what happened, it could have put Judy in a more vulnerable state, maybe a little more of a trusting state. I don't know. Maybe someone saw that and took advantage of the situation. A crime of opportunity.
So she was 50. Seems a little, I mean, I'm not a doctor, but 50 seems somewhat young to have whatever it was, a neurological episode. And she goes on the 600-mile journey, assuming she takes like a bus ride, assuming she's not flying. So go on to like a 10-mile or a 10-hour journey to North Carolina. And then she just doesn't want to go back home. Was she still in the episode when she was presumably killed? Yeah, it just seems kind of weird to me.
Yeah, I guess that's the theory, that she was still in this episode once she got to North Carolina and possibly even when she was killed. But I agree, it seems unlikely. And if she were in her 70s or 80s, for example, and maybe experiencing Alzheimer's, this would be a totally different story. I think it's a lot different for someone at that age to end up 600 miles away than someone of Judy's age.
Also, before we move on to wherever you're taking me on this journey, the toy truck was weird, right? That was a weird thing.
Yeah, I thought that was a weird detail. Why would Judy be purchasing a toy truck? There are no children with her. Kind of made me wonder if that sighting was even Judy or if this were someone else.
Yeah, that... I'm trying to remember which eyewitness you said. It was just kind of a random stranger that said they saw someone who looked like Judy driving a car with some boxes and a toy truck.
This was a deli owner. So I guess this place where she purchased sandwiches, they also sold toy trucks.
Okay. Probably not her, if I'm going to assume anything.
I wouldn't think so, but maybe a random purchase like that would make more sense if she weren't in her right state of mind. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jeff was not named a suspect. With the location of Judy's body and Jeff's size, it's often reported that he was obese. He likely wouldn't have been able to hike to the location where Judy was found. It was also determined that it was unlikely for Judy to have been killed elsewhere and physically transported there. It's not like you could drive up to the spot, so someone would have had to manually move her there. It seems more likely that she was killed in the direct vicinity she was found in. Also, there were plenty of witnesses who could account for Jeff's location during the time Judy went missing. And Jeff hired 3 private investigators to look into Judy's case. I don't think if he were involved, if he were guilty, he would go to the lengths of hiring 3 different private investigators. You could probably just hire one if you were trying to cover up your actions. I get it. He was an attorney, made good money, but still, I don't think you would do that. I've turned this case over in my head a million times, it seems, and the final possibility, and the one I find most probable, and the one you've already hinted at, is as strange as it may seem, Judy wanted to escape. Whether it be temporary or permanent, she wanted to get away for some reason. I want to go back to what I mentioned early on, how there were differing accounts of Judy and Jeff's relationship. According to the Philadelphia Inquirer, 2 of Judy's friends said Judy wasn't sure that she wanted to get married. It was a topic of conversation among the friends, and they believed that Judy more or less did it to appease Jeff, as well as his mother, who wanted to see him get married and wanted to plan a big wedding. It seemed like Judy would have been content staying together as a couple, but not getting married. We have to remember, she was married twice before. Also, Jeff presented Judy with a prenuptial agreement before the wedding, which upset her. Although she did ultimately sign it, she did so begrudgingly. Judy's friend said, quote, Judy was not real thrilled about her marriage. She liked Jeff. I think she loved him, but he can be kind of needy sometimes, and it wore on her, unquote. The same friend explained that Judy always kept some cash, a stash of sorts, aside somewhere in the house, and it's possible she brought these funds with her, and that's how she made it by without leaving a credit card trail. But despite all of this, her friends didn't believe that she would permanently leave her children, and if she wanted out of her marriage, she would have just left, which I was wondering about too. From everything I read, Judy seemed so outspoken, didn't seem like she would be one to hide how she feels. It seemed like what they said was true. If she wanted to leave Jeff, she would have. But what if she was unsure? What if Judy was at a crossroads? She didn't know whether she wanted to stay with Jeff or leave him. And while her kids acknowledged that they can see their mom just wanting to take off, they said she would have said goodbye. She wouldn't have left it open-ended. So with all this information, I think the most likely scenario is that Judy was contemplating leaving Jeff, but she wasn't sure. Maybe the conference sent her over the edge for some reason, or maybe there was an argument that we don't know about, or maybe it was a million little things that culminated. Maybe at the conference, she realized, I don't even want to be here. This could have been enough for her to want to escape him for a temporary period, maybe even just a few days or a week. And from there, she was an unfortunate victim of foul play by a person who had nothing to do with the events of Judy's disappearance. It seems like Judy was on a hike and she met with someone with ill intent. Didn't seem that robbery was a motive considering the cash left at the scene. So was this murder for murder's sake? While there has not been a suspect named in this case, authorities believe that the killer likely had ties to the area she was found and that the items left behind at the scene, the sunglasses and blue backpack, belonged to the killer, although it's unconfirmed who owned these items. Some have wondered if there was another man in Judy's life who she met up with in North Carolina, but there's no evidence of this, and witnesses who saw Judy in Asheville recalled her being alone. Police looked into a serial killer with 4 known victims named Gary Michael Hilton during their investigation because he left one of his victims tied to a tree not far from where Judy was found. But Gary's known killings didn't start until 2007, which would be 10 years after Judy was murdered. There's never been a definitive link made between Gary and Judy, but the possibility still remains that he could be responsible. When I was researching this case and came upon Gary's name, I thought it sounded familiar. Then I got in a little further and realized I watched a show about one of his victims, Meredith Emerson, and that case was horrible. I really feel for Meredith's family because Gary is one disturbing individual in all the other families as well of the victims. One of the details that stuck out to me was that he has no teeth. And I thought that was strange. But then I found out that he removed them himself to take on a scarier appearance. And that is just scary for you. It's beyond disturbing. Okay, maybe it wasn't all of his teeth, but it was a good number of his teeth. But Gary was known to steal his victim's debit cards, so it seems unlike him to leave cash behind. It doesn't seem too far-fetched that Gary could have killed Judy, but there's no strong evidence that he did. What's your final theory? What do you think most likely happened here?
I still like my original thought, and this is honestly, this is the first time I'm hearing this, but I still like what I was thinking earlier, that she willingly wanted to get away, and it seemed like everything just kept compounding, and eventually she didn't snap, but you know, she just wanted out, clean break, and she, like I said before, maybe she loved North Carolina, and she knew she would like it if she escaped there, so she decided to, and unfortunately ran into the wrong person on that hiking trail that day. I still think that's pretty likely because, like we had said before, she is wearing hiking clothes seemingly intentionally. Yeah, and I'm also going back to what you mentioned about the neurological episode. So we had gotten a pretty good account from the clerk of what Judy told her that day. And it seemed like, based on what the clerk said, it seemed like a pretty coherent backstory. Again, I don't really know what goes on in these neurological episodes. Maybe someone is completely coherent, knows their background, but I don't know. They don't know what they're doing. So they go to North Carolina and travel 600 miles. That would seem kind of crazy to me that she would get to North Carolina and then talk to this clerk and give her whole backstory. She's from Boston. She was at, you know, this medical convention, whatever. And it seemed like she wanted to go to North Carolina.
So
to me,
let's pose that question to our listeners then. Maybe we have medical professionals listening, anyone who might be more familiar with a neurological event that could make you do exactly what Judy did, or at least you could do it and not necessarily be completely, or you could do it and seem coherent at the same time. Any of our listeners who know, reach out to us. Let us know your thoughts on that one, because clearly we don't have the answers. Something being off with Judy mentally, though, could explain that weird sighting at that mall outside of Philadelphia where she, or someone who looked like Judy, was kind of acting bizarre and asking weird questions. But my question for you is, I think we are pretty aligned in what we think happened here, but I think Judy intended to be gone temporarily. Do you think Judy intended to be gone temporarily, or do you think this was a permanent decision in her mind?
I mean, I was kind of thinking permanently, but I don't know. That's a good question. Maybe it was like she wanted to be gone a year. I don't know. It kind of seemed like she wanted to just get away from Jeff because it was seemingly forcing her into these things that she didn't want to do. And maybe she just finally had enough and wanted to get away forever. Maybe, I don't know, maybe she just needed a break, like you're thinking. Maybe it was temporary, 6 months, and then she was back. But
yeah, just because it seemed like Judy would be the type of person to just tell Jeff if she didn't want to be with him. She doesn't seem like she would hide her feelings or be scared to tell him or anything based on what those who knew Judy described.
Well, why didn't she say that with the prenup? Why didn't she say that about getting married? Why didn't she just say, I don't want to do this. Let's just stay dating. And if you don't want to do that, then let's break up. Why didn't she do that when these conversations started happening? Because it seems like she didn't want to do it. And like I was saying before, maybe it just all compounded. And eventually she wanted a clean break because she was being forced into things she didn't want to do.
Yeah, it's complex. I think we'll never know without being in her head. But maybe she felt conflicted about everything. Maybe she didn't feel 100% certain one way or the other. Jeff passed away in 2005, never knowing what truly happened to Judy. And her kids and friends have had to carry on in life, not knowing what happened. I think it's easy to get caught up in the mystery of this case, but keeping in mind, there is still someone out there who killed Judy and got away with it. If you have any information regarding Judy's murder, you are asked to contact the Buncombe County Sheriff's Office at 828-250-4503. Thank you all for tuning into this episode. Feel free to share with us what you think happened. I really want to know if others are kind of on the same page as what Sean and I are thinking, or if they believe something totally different happened. That's all we have for now, but we'll be back next Sunday with an all-new case. Bye.
Bye.